This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. We hope everyone's having a safe and happy Memorial Day weekend. Of course, we want to remember those, the men and women who paid the ultimate price and made the ultimate sacrifice for us having our freedoms that we have today. Memorial Day weekend, always a fun one as we look forward to the summer months. The grills are firing up. Michael, how are we doing this weekend?
We're doing good. Originally called Decoration Day, going back to just after the Civil War, where James Garfield gave a great speech to the president about why it was significant, and Arlington Cemetery, and it moved on to Memorial Day. So here we are. It's exciting. It's always a good time to honor those who gave up the ultimate sacrifice for our country. And, and then we have the traditions of it, which are parades and barbecues and hanging out and watching the Indy 500. Wes Reynolds is back there, which is awesome. Yeah. And watch a little bit of basketball. We're watching Rick Carlisle. What can he do next that's not going to work, right?
he did drop a nice play at the end there with the wide receiver formation. They ran a rub route on the play to get Neesmith a wide open look. But yeah, it was a not so great ending for the Indiana Pacers as they fall to the Boston Celtics 114-111 after being up by as many as 18 points. Indiana now facing elimination Monday night as Eastern Conference Finals, it could be wrapped up real fast. Like, I don't think many people thought a sweep was on the horizon, just given the fact that Boston tends to kind of have one of those games where they just lose it in the end, or they just aren't really dialed in. But those games, whether it was game one or last night, you figured that Indiana should have grabbed at least one of those games, if not two of them.
I mean, Indiana could easily be up 2-1, but I think at the end of the game, like the end of football games, they haven't been able to close the gap. Carlisle didn't call timeout, and the ball gets stolen. Great play, right there by
Drew Holiday.
Drew Holiday. Yeah, thank you, Femi. Yep. At the end of the game there. I mean, there was a time Bill Berman and I were watching the game together, and it was like, you could have gotten Boston plus 5.5 points in the third quarter. Mm. And we both looked at each other and said, you know what? I mean, what the book is telling you is that they can't continue to shoot at this 64% rate that they did in the first half. And, when you look at the box score after the game, you say, how did we lose? Well, you didn't close out the fourth quarter. I mean, in game one, you didn't. Had it right there. In game two, you had it right there. 7-point lead with 3 minutes to go. Going back and forth. And to me, your best players weren't taking the shots you needed to take. I mean, where was Siakam down the stretch, right? Yeah. And so I just think, to me, they're going to look back on this series and say, we were this close without Halliburton, Femi. Without Halliburton, and the Celtics go on. And again, the Celtics are going to have a walk to the park to the Eastern Conference. It's really kind of remarkable, right?
I've never seen anything like it in any sport to where it has just somehow lined up this way. And if you're the Boston Celtics, you don't have to apologize for taking advantage of this. A good team should take advantage of these situations. But you go back to the first round where there's no Jimmy Butler for the Heat. And then in the second round, you end up having Donovan Mitchell get hurt midway through the series. He's not able to play in games four or games five. And in this round, Tyrese Halliburton gets injured in game two. It's just like, man, they're the best players on these teams, and why these teams got to the point to where they got to, and Boston was able to kind of get, I guess, a lucky break from the injury standpoint against them. But like I said, Celtics fans, don't apologize. You don't have to apologize for taking advantage of this. All you can do is play the teams in front of you, as last night they beat the Indiana Pacers. Now, Indiana, you mentioned it, without Halliburton, able to cover the number of 7.5. Game also goes over the total of 220.5, and the Pacers were within that number the entire game. It was a wire-to-wire job for Pacers. If anybody sprinkled on the money line, got to be feeling a little bit bad for those people today, just given how the fourth quarter played out. Boston outscoring Indiana 33-21 in that game. Andrew Nembhard, the leading scorer for the Pacers, with 32 points. And for the Boston Celtics, everyone, Michael, had been calling for Jason Tatum to step up. Well, he stepped up last night, 36 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists, a near triple-double on 12 of 23 from the field. Tatum was big last night in this win.
Yeah, no question. And 5 for 10 from the 3-point line. You know, she finally got out of that slump that he's been in a little bit in the 3-point line and did it. I mean, look, let's face it. Boston is resourceful. They made the plays that they had to make. I mean, they got out rebounded in the game. And when their defense needed to get stops to get them back off that 18-point deficit in the third quarter and they got it close, you could just get the sense, Femi, I don't know about you, but I got the sense that, you know, this is going to be one of those situations where, you know, you're going to have to make some plays if you're Indiana that they couldn't make down the stretch, and that ultimately cost them a game. I mean, Horford, too. Look, yeah. He's 7 for 12 from the 3-point line. You know, I mean, and that clutch three he makes over by opposite of the Pacer bench was huge for them. It got them, you know, cut that lead back down and gave them the lead. So give them credit. I mean, look, it's one of those, I think this summer late July after summer league, Carlisle's going to sit there and say, man, I had some moments where we had a chance to win the game and we just couldn't do it. And I don't think you can blame – this isn't a blame of the players, but, I mean, Nesbitt, you know, Nebhart, I mean, he gets the ball stolen from him. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they get T.J. McConnell comes off the bench. He's 10 for 17, 23 points. You know, he gets 6 assists. He has 9 rebounds. I mean, think about what this guy's done. Big Daddy was telling me the other day. He'll be coming over today for – I'll get the full rundown today, Femi, of what he thinks. But he tells me, you know, McConnell thinks he's better than he really is. Like, he is pretty good. He plays in the NBA. Like, what are you kidding me? He's better than he thinks he is. Where do you come up with that crap?
I'd take McConnell on my team if I was a coach or a general manager.
Me too.
He plays hard. He's not the most gifted offensively, but he's going to play hard. He's going to find a shot for himself, and he's going to play make. That's what you want
out of a
six
man. Tell me when he doesn't get to the paint. Tell me when they can stay in front of him. I mean, they can't stay in front of the guy. I mean, I know he's not a great 3-point shooter. He's 1 for 4 from the 3-point line. But, you know, to me, when he's on the court, they're better. They're a better offensive team. Now, they may not be as good defensively with him on the court. I get that. But they're a better team offensively. They can run things through that. So, look, I mean, this is going to end pretty quickly. I don't know if Indiana can come back from that. But to me, I think ultimately, you know, this if we get Boston-Dallas, I'm not so sure I'm ready to run away and just say, okay, give the title to Boston.
Yeah, I'm not so sure I'd be saying that either. Like, this has been a nice run, as we've said, up to this point for the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference, but it's going to be a war in the NBA Finals where they'll be playing. I've been saying it all playoffs. This will be their first playoff game, will be game one of the NBA Finals based on the teams that they've faced so far in the Eastern Conference playoffs. But you mentioned Rick Carlisle and how he's probably going to look back and probably kick himself a little bit this summer based on what happened and transpired in this series. Well, after the game, A little spicy with the media. Here's what Rick Carlisle had to say when he was asked a question about what happened towards the end of the game.
Rick, you were up 8 with about 2.5 minutes to go in this game.
Watched the ending, so you don't need to remind me. I saw everything that happened. Everything.
What to you was the difference in that? Everything?
Everything that happened, yeah. We got to look at what's in front of us, you know? We got the best fans in the NBA here. We got the greatest basketball building on the planet. And we got another game in front of them to go after these guys. And believe me when I tell you, we are going after them.
Ricardo, hey, we're not laying down. We're not looking back. We're looking forward. We're looking through the windshield. We're not looking in the rearview mirror as they're down 0-3 there. But it's just a couple different calls. Like, what did you think of him not calling the timeout when Nembhard was dribbling? Because I know, like, some coaches say, hey, we don't want them to set their defense up, so we don't want to give them a look. Let's just have the free-flowing. And the Pacers, if there's any team that wants to rely on free-flowing ball, it would be them, because that's kind of how they played. But it felt like in both instances, whether it was game one on the inbounds where they were having trouble getting it in, or when Nembhard was dribbling up the court, ultimately having it stolen by Jrue Holiday, at least in one of those spots, maybe a timeout could have been a good idea for Rick Carlisle and the Pacers.
Yeah, I mean, to me, and then I thought that at the end, I thought in the last 3 minutes there was too much isolation. Nembhard kind of tried to take the game over when they were really better at spreading it out and moving. You know, when Indiana moves the ball, when the ball goes from side to side with Indiana, they're hard to defend offensively. So, yeah, I mean, look, I think to me the reason he wants to go forward is because I don't think he wants to revisit those painful minutes, because in his mind – in his mind, he has to be sitting there saying, wow, I think, you know, this was a great opportunity that we didn't close in on, just like in game one, yeah. had an opportunity. Look, let's face it. These series have been who wins the last 4 minutes of the quarter, of the fourth quarter. I mean, Dallas has made the plays. Luka hits that great three, man. You know, with Gobert in his face and, you know, on a switch, right? That's what they wanted, and they got it.
Yep.
And the first game, it was the same way. And this game here, I mean, Dallas was trailing against Minnesota by 18, a long part of the game, and you could just feel Dallas was going to get back in it because they have two elite players. Kyrie makes three threes in the fourth that, you know, was unbelievable, scores 13 points in the quarter. And then this is the same thing when Boston had to make the plays. And I think this is what we learn really at the end of the day about seven-game series. It's not like mm-hmm. the NC2A where one team can win and dominate on a night and then they go on. This is about who wins. The best team always makes the plays at the end, and I think we're seeing it in both series.
Yeah, and we're also seeing that styles sort of make fights in a lot of these series as well. I mean, Minnesota, playing that two big lineup, they were able to have success against Jokic and give him different looks, but it's a little different when Dallas is a little bit more perimeter-oriented with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. Now it's asking a little bit more of Anthony Edwards. A lot of been made about Anthony Edwards being tired. I find that a little strange. I mean, the guy's 22 years old. He's the youngest guy on the floor, and they're talking about how he's exhausted. But and I get, like, Kyrie Irving having to defend him is a task, but, I mean, tired, I don't know if I can go all the way and buy that one with Anthony Edwards. They got to get him going. They got to get Carl Anthony Towns going. I do want to get your thoughts on this series on the other side, because right now the series price, Dallas is a pretty big favorite, minus 550, and rightfully so. They won both games on Minnesota's home floor, and we have never seen a team, when they're the road team, win those first two games in the conference finals. They've never blown the lead. So is this series over for the Minnesota Timberwolves? Will it be Dallas that advances to the NBA Finals? I'll ask Michael that question as we recap what we saw game two the other night and preview and look forward to game three tonight in the Metroplex. Also, we'll get to the NFL. We're just rolling along here on the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter, our own Bill Lady asked Wes Reynolds his thoughts on the Indy 500. Wes, an Indianapolis native, obviously very, very aware of what's going on in Indianapolis with the Indy 500. He gives his thoughts on that. Also, some of the NASCAR thoughts around the track. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox. Absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. Welcome back. It's the Lombardi Line. We're hanging out here on the DraftKings Network, Sunday of Memorial Day weekend. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. We will get to the NFL in about 20 minutes. We got our buddy Brian Broaddus of 105.3 The Fan, former NFL scout, now radio host down in Dallas. We'll get his thoughts on the Dallas Cowboys, maybe the Dallas Mavericks, perhaps the Dallas Stars. And does all this success in the Metroplex put pressure on the Cowboys? We'll ask Bucket at 10:45 Eastern Time, 7:45 Pacific. Then in hour number two, Jonathan Von Tobel joins us in his usual spot, 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, as we break down the NBA. JVT, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, also co-host of VSiN Primetime, which you can check out weekdays 6 to 9 Eastern Time right here on the Sports Betting Network. But Michael, as we were heading to break, I want to ask you, are the Minnesota Timberwolves done? Because get this, this was from Matt Moore over at the Action Network. He said that teams up 2-0 after starting on the road are 16-0 in the conference finals. Right now, series price for the Dallas Mavericks is minus 525. The T-Wolves 4-1. Is Minnesota done? Is this series over in the Western Conference Finals?
Well, I mean, look, we know both games have been really close, and Dallas stole game one, didn't play well. Dallas played less in game two and still stole that game. And so, obviously, this game here is going to be the one that determines whether we're going to get more action in the series. I think the universal thought that I have is Dallas can't guard Luka and they can't guard Kyrie. And with this drop coverage that they run in terms of laying off, all these lobs are killing them, whether it's Gafford or whether it's Lively or PJ Washington. I mean, it just has been very difficult for a Minnesota team that has been so good defensively. And if you talk to the Minnesota, if you talk to the Dallas people, they'll tell you that, you know, in the past, Minnesota, this is what they run. This is what they do 90% of the time and drop. And at times, they have switched playing Dallas to zone because they can't defend it. Again, there's going to have to be another adjustment because they can't continue to live in this world where they're giving up lobs to guys who typically don't score a lot of points. And that's what's hurting them. And then can they guard Luka? I think Luka showed you down the stretch that he knows they don't have anybody that can really guard him. You mentioned Edwards in the last block about him being exhausted. Well, he's working hard on defense, Femi. I mean, this is a constant, you know, battle. If Naz Reid doesn't make those, I mean, he was incredible as the sixth man of the year, and what he did in the second half was unbelievable. But still, I think Edwards, with all the trapping that they're giving him, they're making him work, they're making him make decisions. This is kind of a stage that he hasn't really been on yet in terms of the how you're attacking them defensively. It's a long-winded answer to your question, but to me, I think Dallas has been the better team. I think Dallas is the better team, and I think the better teams always win seven-game series.
Yeah, because I think that's the one thing that if you're a Minnesota backer or if you're a Timberwolves fan, you hang your hat on, well, these games have been close. But like you said, are you going to get Naz Reid shooting as well? Naz Reid is a terrific player, but I mean, the man, it felt like he was having an out-of-body experience from three-point range the other night. 7 of 9 from three-point range, 23 points off the bench. When you get that kind of performance from somebody who's off the bench, and yes, he is a really good, he's a sixth man of the year. It's a very acknowledged. You want to win those games when you get that kind of point production from somebody off of the bench. And the T-Wolves weren't able to do it. And I thought Charles Barkley actually made a really good point on the broadcast in that the game was not lost for Minnesota in the fourth quarter, whatever. It was kind of lost at the end of the first half where the T-Wolves were up by 18. And it looked like one of those, well, Dallas is probably just happy getting the split on the road. They got home court advantage. They'll go back home. If they hold serve at home, they should win the series. But when they let them creep back into the game and they were only down, I believe it was 10 or 11 at half, that's when it was like, oh, we're within striking distance. If you're the Mavericks, we can go out and get this game. And they ultimately snatched it away in the second half. But yeah, I think if you're the Minnesota T-Wolves, it's now or never. It's got to be tonight, where the betting market is interested in Minnesota tonight. It was 3. Now we're down to 2.5. There's even some 2s out there, Michael, with Dallas only favored by 2 at home, total 207.5. I don't think this is a pure market here based on the home court advantage and the ratings. I think if this wasn't a desperation spot for the T-Wolves, this would not be our spread here. But the fact that it is a desperation spot, is it Minnesota or pass? Or do you think that this is getting a little bit of a discount on the Dallas Mavericks at home in game 3?
Well, look, I mean, we've seen Dallas play rather inconsistently too, right? I mean, you know, they get behind by 18, but I think there is a sense of confidence. And, you know, what we've learned so far is home court for the Minnesota Timberwolves typically hasn't worked. I mean, they went into Denver, and if you're Jason Kidd tonight, you're screaming to your team, look, fellas, this isn't over. They went into Denver. They won 3 games in Denver. I mean, they won 3 games in Denver. That's why they won the series. They won 3 games in Denver. I think a lot of this is, to me, I would lean towards in-game betting here for this game because I want to see what adjustments Minnesota has in their arsenal. Do they have any? Can they stop this? Can they challenge this drop coverage and stop all these lobs that are coming in there? You know, and how are the Mavericks responding? You know, look, Luka, I saw his interview after the game, and, you know, he said, well, and somebody mentioned that he had, like, he smelled like he had a bunch of, hot heat warmers all over him, you know, and so cream. And I'm sure he is beat up, but the guy's an incredible warrior and he's a distributor. And they make the plays down the stretch, something that Indiana couldn't do, right? And I think that's what you're always concerned about. I do believe Minnesota will play their best tonight. I really do. But I just think the Dallas over the long period, whether it's this game or next game, is the better team.
Yeah, and I do think the point of, like, if these games are close, I always ask myself, all right, which team would I feel comfortable with in a close spot? And Anthony Edwards has been terrific. He's 22 years old. He looks like a future face of the league. He's a bright young star. But Luka Doncic has a little bit more experience. Kyrie Irving has hit one of the biggest shots in NBA history in a game 7 against the Golden State Warriors when he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers. These guys have been there. They've done that. They know what it takes in these close games. While Minnesota feels like, at least Anthony Edwards, still learning this process despite how dominant he's looked earlier in the playoffs, When you spin it forward to a potential NBA Finals matchup of Dallas versus Boston, DraftKings already has the look-ahead Finals prices out there. Boston is minus 255. Dallas is plus 210. Given the fact that the Achilles heel for Boston is crunch time minutes, what do they do in the clutch when it's a close game? You can get away with it against Indiana when there's no Tyrese Halliburton, but if it's a close game against the Dallas Mavericks and it's Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, I think I'd favor those guys over Tatum and Brown based on what I've seen so far this season.
I've been saying this for 2 months now. Since the All-Star break, there's been no better defense in the league than Dallas. And, you know, Gafford comes in and makes incredible contributions. PJ Washington has made. They get rid of Grant Williams, a former Celtic who wasn't in good shape, who wasn't able to really fit within their program. And it's changed their team. And when you have two legitimate Hall of Fame superstars on your team, and this is not the overstatement or being, you know, being carried away, mm-hmm. you can play anybody. And they're playing team basketball. The way Kyrie's playing right now, his ball handling, his, you know, we saw it early in game one. He dominated the first half. And then in this game, he dominated the fourth quarter along with Luka. Luka was great in the second half of this first game, and then he dominated the fourth quarter. They're just a hard team to play, and I think they match up. They'll be confident against Boston. I think it'll be a great series. I don't think it'll be a sweep. I don't think Boston's going to walk in the park. I think they're going to meet their match, and you know they're going to have to play really well, and they're capable of it. We know that Boston, you know, had the most wins of any NBA team in the league, so that we know they're capable of that. But I think it'll be a great series. I really do.
Yeah, if Dallas takes care of business at home, we might have a lot of time to break this one down, Michael. There could be a potential 7-day layoff without basketball if we get these things wrapped up in four, or maybe if they just win in five games the Dallas Mavericks, because it looks like Boston is headed towards a sweep, at least maybe maximum five games likely in that series. And we'll see what happens tonight with the Mavericks and the T-Wolves. If Dallas prevails once again, it could be a long drought without NBA hoops for us here, because the NBA Finals, regardless what happens, they start June 6th, Thursday, June 6th. So it could be a long layoff for us as we're sitting here on May 26th for the NBA postseason. For me, I find it interesting just from a bettor's perspective. Do you wait to bet the series price with Dallas if we end up getting Dallas and Boston, or do you try to jump on the price now for Dallas to win the title at plus 240? Because it's better right now, but also they have to get past the Minnesota Timberwolves. So you do take on a little bit of risk given the fact that they haven't wrapped up this series quite yet.
Yeah, but I would take this price here because I think if they do, say they, you know, they win tonight, we know that price is going to go down, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this is a really good team, and I think they're finally now people are understanding how a really good team they are. And so, I think I would probably, you got to take it now or else that price is going to go down.
Yeah, if they win tonight, I think it'll mirror what the series price is, given the fact that both teams will be up 3-0, and no team in NBA history has ever come back from an 0-3 deficit in the playoffs. We saw it almost close last year with the Boston Celtics against the Heat, but they couldn't quite get it done at home in a Game 7. All right, that's it for the basketball. We'll talk some more basketball in hour number two, but coming up next, we turn our attention to the gridiron. We're going in the room with some contract negotiations here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time only, we're slashing the price of our annual subscription. Listen up. It's normally $240. You can now secure your subscription for just $199. Sign up today, and we'll throw in an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code Lombardi. But hurry. This special offer is only available until May 31st. That's 5 days. You're going to get all the daily best bets, the leaderboard, the betting system, premium analysis, 24/7 video content. You got 5 days to get this done. VSiN.com/subscribe, and you have to use promo code Lombardi if you want that discount. $199 for 14 months. VSiN.com/subscribe. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Femi Abebefe here in downtown Las Vegas. 15 minutes from now, we'll be joined by Brian Broaddus, radio host at 105 Through the Fan in Dallas, former NFL scout. We'll talk some Dallas Cowboys, get his thoughts on the offseason. We haven't spoken with Bucket since the Super Bowl week, so we'll get his thoughts up updated opinions on everything that's going around the National Football League. But Michael, I wanted to play this soundbite of Daniel Jones, quarterback for the New York Giants, was asked about his rehab and was asked about how things are going throughout this offseason. And of course, was asked about the New York Giants doing a little bit of work on the quarterbacks, whether through free agency or in the draft. Here's what Dimes had to say when he was asked about it by the media.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't fired up about it, but, you know, I think that, you know, it's part of it at this level. And like I said, but, you know, what I can do is focus on myself and getting healthy, playing the best football I can play, and that I know I'm capable of playing. So that's my job, and that's what I'm going to do.
Well, it sounds like Daniel Jones didn't read the report about how they were going for Joe Alt instead of maybe Drake May.
Yeah, I don't think anybody buys that. I don't think anybody's buying that. I mean, they were pretty clear they wanted Drake May, and they didn't get him, and they retreated. You know, look, the kid's probably right. I mean, this is a make or break for him, right? I mean, he's going to have to prove his third year of that contract that he signed. There's not much guaranteed money. It may just be for injury, so it's not going to kick into skill and injury. So they could walk away from the deal, and it's important for Brian Daboll, the head coach, and it's also important for Joe Shane, the general manager. I mean, look, that right now, I'm not sure they're better than the Washington football team, right? I don't think they're better than the Commanders. We know they're not better than the Cowboys and the Eagles because every time they play them, it's hard for them to get close to beating them. So, you know, they're going to change defensively. They're going to become a more of a Tampa 2. They're going to try to rush 4. They paid a lot of money for Brian Burns to get him in there to be the rusher that will go along of Thibodeau on the other side to help them. They don't want to be a blitzing team as much as they were in the past, which hopefully they believe will help their corners. And then it's going to come down to this offensive line. And, you know, we've talked to a lot of people and about the line. And, you know, this is one of the lines where, in fairness, if you want to be fair to Daniel Jones, he hasn't been protected very well. Is this going to change? I read a column yesterday about Illuminor as being their secret weapon. I mean, if you watched Illuminor play at the Raiders last year, now he played for the offensive line coach at the Raiders, who's now at the Giants, and it was always 50-50. It was good sometimes, and sometimes it wasn't, depending on the level of play. If that's your right tackle and he's the key, I think you're going to have some struggles.
Not to turn this into a Giants conversation here, but I wanted to read off their first 8 games for you, Michael, and to think that what is the record for the Giants realistically after the first 8 weeks? So they host the Minnesota Vikings. Then they're at the Washington Commanders week 2, at Cleveland week 3, host Dallas week 4, at Seattle week 5, host the Bengals week 6, host the Eagles week 7, at the Steelers week 8. I'm not Minnesota, they're favored perhaps, but outside of that, where are they going to be favored to win these games?
Well, they're not going to be favored when they go on the road. I mean, look, here's the reality of it. Here's what no one wants to understand. That game in Carolina, which is being played in Munich, Germany, I believe, or some city in Germany, they're a half a point favorite, Femi. So that's a neutral field. They're a half a point favorite, which tells America that the book feels like they're closer to being one of the worst teams in the league than they are being a playoff team. So when you look at the first 10 weeks of the season, if they're 3-7, after that, they're probably doing pretty good, right?
Yeah,
they're probably doing pretty good. I mean, could they upset Dallas? It hasn't happened. Yeah. I mean, they got Philly, Cincy. I mean, they go Seattle, Cincy, Philly, Pittsburgh. And then they come home to play Washington before traveling over to Germany. I mean, I think it's going to be hard. Can they stay healthy? Look, here's the reality, and I don't want to turn this into a Giant conversation, but the reality of the Giants were they mischaracterized their 9 wins their playoff year. Mm-hmm. They were fortunate. The second half of the season, they did not play well. Yes, they won in Minnesota in a playoff game, but everybody recognized Minnesota wasn't good. And this team, I don't think, improved their talent base since then.
Yeah, I mean, people were making jokes that entire week talking about how Giants-Vikings wild card game was the fraud bowl. Like that's what everybody – like. I think there was a very documented kind of run-up to that saying, hey, neither of these teams are really playoff teams, but somebody has to win the game. Giants were the ones that go ahead and do that. But that sort of spins it forward to the quarterback conversation that's happening this offseason with the negotiations because Daniel Jones got paid last year. The Giants, they say publicly they have no buyer's remorse, but we know Rich Eisen went ahead and reported that earlier this offseason saying that, hey, the Giants Giants internally have a little buyer's remorse giving Daniel Jones the contract. Well, the team's now on the clock. Jacksonville, Miami, Green Bay, Dallas, their quarterbacks are ready for big extensions. And for Trevor Lawrence, it sounds like one might be imminent. Are you comfortable paying those guys the big money that these quarterbacks are getting? Because this is now a $55, $60 million a year game when you're talking about getting a quarterback on a second or third contract.
No, you're not comfortable, but it's the market, right? And so what's your alternative? I mean, you know, look, does Tua deserve to get a good contract based on the way he played? Sure. Hasn't beaten any good teams, but his numbers are astounding, right? They're really good. Trevor Lawrence's numbers, he's never averaged over 7.1 yards per attempt. But what is your alternative? You're going to build almost a $2 billion stadium in Jacksonville. You've got city funds to approve it. It's a collaborative effort between the city and the team. And so are you going to go in there with no quarterback? I mean, these are things that you have to consider. Like, and Doug Peterson is in all those guys that are on that list, maybe not Mike McDaniel, but they're looking at this year they have to win or else somebody's coming in. Somebody's mm-hmm. going to change. You got Mike Vrabel sitting out there. You got Bill Belichick sitting out there. You have two really good coaches that could give you some real uptick in terms of filling a stadium. Ask Jerry Jones what Bill Parcells did for his franchise in terms of building the star. So I think to me, you have to give that some consideration.
So then if you're not comfortable doing it and you're sitting in that chair as the general manager, knowing that, hey, we're not comfortable with this, but we should probably get this done. How do you go about structuring the contract in a way to where maybe it's not team friendly, but you can at least still build around this quarterback? Because all of these guys have flaws. These ones more flaws than some of the other guys like the Mahomes, Burrow, the Allens, the Herberts. How do you go about making sure that this contract isn't going to kill you down the line?
Well, I think what you have to try to do is make the contract fit the performance, right? So you know there's going to be a structure. And probably this is why it's taken so long to get these deals done. It's not a rubber stamp like Joe Burrow was. Okay, here you're going to get $53 million. You're the best player in the league. Mm-hmm. That's easy to do. But I think ultimately what happens here is you're going to – what I'm sure the teams are trying to do is keep that paragraph five or the average per year lower with incentives based on wins, based on playoff wins, based on getting to where you deserve to be in that conversation. That's a different conversation than with Baker Mayfield, right? Baker Mayfield's at $35 million per year. Daniel Jones at 40. They paid him almost to the market level before the market's exploded. So you're trying to do it so that you can tie some of it to wins. That's the hard thing to do because the agent's sitting there saying, well, I'm not doing that. You know, I'll be a free agent or franchise me. You don't have a lot of, you know, this is the arena you're in. And if you don't have a quarterback that you like, this is what's interesting about, and we'll ask Buckethead of this in the next block. This is what's interesting about what Dallas is. Dallas not doing Dak because they have some hope that Trey Lance, based on practices, could eventually become a good player? I don't know that. I don't know that, but all the other teams don't have an alternative behind it. They just don't. And so I think that's really the issue you're looking at.
So if you're representing Trevor Lawrence or Tua or Jordan Love and you're Michael Lombardi, you're no longer the football executive. You're Michael Lombardi, the football agent. Are you just saying we're going to wait for these other guys to sign and maybe we can go over the top? Because it almost feels like if you're one of these quarterbacks, it's kind of you're incentivized to just wait. Why rush to sign?
No question. That's exactly what you're going to do. You're going to wait to sign. You're not going to be in any rush. Why would you be in a rush? You don't need to be in a rush because the water seeks its level. So they're going to the tide will carry you to a bigger contract. And you can just sit there and you could say, well, look, Tua's never won any games. And look what they paid Tua. Mm-hmm. Tua's never beaten a good team in his life, you know, a winning record. And look what they just paid him.
You beat some good teams at Alabama.
Well, I mean, but I'm sure he's not with this new NIL. He's going to get compensated for those wins now. He's in that class. He's in that suit, so he's going to get paid for that. Yeah. Maybe not to the degree he wants, but he's going to get paid.
Brian Broaddus of 105.3 The Fan in Dallas joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
We're in. NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champion. With the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Well, listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSIN. The crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi, and joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, maybe the Dallas Mavericks are the NBA champions. As we go down to the Metroplex and visit with our buddy Brian Broaddus, host of 105.3 The Fan Radio and also former NFL scout. Broaddus, thanks for joining us as always this morning. We hope everybody's having a fun time down in the Metroplex. And I got to ask you, with the success of the Stars, they win again last night. The Mavericks are up 2-0 in the series. The Rangers just win the World Series last year. Is the success of the other teams in the Dallas area adding some more pressure on the Cowboys internally, or is that just external noise and we're all just talking about it and they don't really care?
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. And yeah, there is pressure. I mean, you know, and you can feel it through the fan base is really what you can, you know, with the way that you mentioned the Stars and the Mavs, and then we had the Rangers with the championship last year. You know, you're starting to see all the graphics of, okay, teams in the Metroplex that have now played in championship series, and everybody is, you know, very current, and then the Dallas Cowboys are 30 years removed. So, yeah, this has not gone unnoticed by, you know, people. I spent a lot of time over at the Star. You know, people are talking about it. You can detect there's a little bit of a sense of urgency to try and pull something together, but easier said than done with that crew that's tried again for the last 30 years.
Brian, tell me about their offensive line as they drafted two guys that they need to play immediately. Is Guyton going to play left tackle, and where's Beebe going to play? Is he going to be the center, and how is this all working based on the OTAs?
Yeah, Michael, it's, you know, they've done a really good job through the years of plug and play first round offensive linemen. And you and I've had this experience before, though, of when you're dealing with your draft players and then you watch coaches tell you, well, listen, let me play this other guy. Let me see how this other guy looks. And, you know, anytime you talk to Mike Solari, the offensive line coach, he reminds you about Brock Hoffman, the center here. And, you know, it's, you know, Tyler Biadasz is no longer here. He's with the Commanders. There was a definite need at center. They move back in the draft. They pick up pick 73. You know, you're like, okay, wow. You know, BB's there, the guard tackle center from Kansas State. And, you know, we go to rookie minicamp. Well, he's out there, you know, with the, you know, running at center. And then we go to the OTA practices. And then, you know, they've got the veteran Hoffman in there playing. So, you know, I think that Will McClay and Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, you know, they'll walk up to Mike McCarthy and they'll walk up to Mike Solari and say, listen, hey, we do have a great history of plug and play linemen. You know, if you want to play Chuma Odoga and, you know, and Brock Hoffman, well, then feel free to get fired for doing that. You know, so, yeah, you know, that's kind of where that's where this is all at right now. Again, they have a great history of this. They are able, you know, if you go back to, you know, Tyron Smith, and then, you know, and then Zach Martin, Travis Frederick, Tyler Smith. I mean, they when they pick a first round lineman. Now, I'll say this about, you know, with Guyton, you know, there's going to be some learning curve there with him. You know, the hands, the feet don't always work well together. Something he's really, really working on right now. So we'll see what happens when we get to. We got one more, you know, OTA practice this week coming up that we get to watch, and then another one, and then we're off to training camp. So hopefully all that will pull together for them, but they've got to feel like that these two guys that they've drafted will be their starting left tackle and starting center when they get going.
Yeah, and that could be a tough challenge for them opening week with the Cleveland Browns and Myles Garrett in that pass rush coming after those guys to start the season. We're hanging out with Brian Broaddus here, host at 105.3 The Fan down in Dallas, also former NFL scout, talking Cowboys here on the Lombardi Line. Well, Broaddus, let's talk about the big quarterback, Dak Prescott, the looming extension that we think is coming. We don't know if this is going to play out in the next year. Maybe that's where we kind of end up here. But do you think that either Dak or maybe CeeDee Lamb or Micah Parsons, would any of those guys get signed at some point this offseason, particularly Dak Prescott, who's entering a free agency year?
Yeah, that's the big question. I think the one that's probably the furthest away, to be honest with you, will be the Dak one. You know, Todd France, the agent, you know, he does a great job for his clients. And, you know, he finds a way to extract, you know, every cent he could get out of the organization. I don't think they're really, really particularly close there. You know, there's these wide receivers are all kind of, you know, around the league are starting to, you know, get some deals done potentially. So we'll see where Lamb's at. He's not at the OTA practices right now. You know, generally when we get to Oxnard around the 25th of July, they will announce a deal. They, you know, they'll find one to get done. Yeah. If they're going to get one done, let's see, Dak and CD would be the two. I think Micah, they've got a little bit more time on their to be able to pull that one off. But yeah, it's not looking too promising right now for the quarterback. And, but we'll see if they could get something done here. But yeah, we're all kind of just waiting to see what happens, but it's carried this far. And, you know, there's a possibility that they could go into the season thinking that, well, okay, we'll do our best to get it done at the end of the year when he hits free agency and go from there. But that's a very dangerous game they're playing there right now.
Brian, tell me from your observation, what does Trey Lance look like, and does he have any legitimate chance to become the heir apparent to Dak if they can't get a deal done?
Yeah, I think, Michael, you know, and again, you and I have experienced this. So I think you would walk in and you would tell Mike McCarthy, if you were the general manager, like, listen, I don't want to see Cooper Rush have one rep with the second team at all. I'm not interested in seeing what Cooper Rush is. I'm interested in seeing what Trey Lance is. You know, they had a program for Trey Lance, much like what you guys had in Cleveland back in the day with the, you know, when you had all those coaches and then you're coaching the young players after practice. Trey Lance did something very similar where he was out there with practice squad receivers, you know, guys, you know, other receivers, tight ends, and working through drills, working through play calls, you know, getting ready each week, you know, having a practice after the practice. So this is a big, big push for Trey Lance, an opportunity for him. They know what they have in Cooper Rush. They need to figure out where Trey Lance is. I've got friends much like you do in San Francisco, you know, that have said, listen, Trey Lance would have been here still if it wouldn't have been for the injuries. You know, they talk very highly about Trey Lance as far as the work ethic and things like that, the athletic ability, the talent. You know, we haven't seen that on full display, you know, because of the limited amount of practices that we get to watch. But in training camp, we hope that, you know, that, you know, again, I don't want to see Cooper Rush take a rep. I mean, all the preseason reps, second team reps, first team reps, those all need to go to Trey Lance to kind of figure this thing out.
Yeah, no, it'll be a fascinating preseason for the Dallas Cowboys if we see Trey Lance get to play a full game, which is something we've never seen really in the NFL for him, maybe about only 4 or 5 starts under his belt. Broadus, we got a couple minutes left. I think if you polled most NFL fans and you asked them about the Dallas Cowboys, the expectation is that they're likely going to take a step back in 2024. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Well, I'll tell you what, though, it's going to be difficult with the first place schedule. And then the, you know, the extra game they catch is the Houston Texans at home. That will be a tough one that they have to deal with as well. So, yeah, you know, it's we'll see what happens. I feel like that maybe the Commanders, you know, I'm an LSU guy. So, you know, I was excited to see the, you know, my quarterback end up there with the Commanders. I don't think the Dallas fans should be particularly happy about that. I think the division will be better. We'll see what happens with Philadelphia, you know, with Kellen Moore's the new OC there, you know, and you know, who knows. But with the Cowboys, sure, the schedule is going to be tougher. There were some guys that went out the door. I don't think particularly the guys that left this organization are guys that you really, really have to be super worried about here. But Mike Zimmer coming in here is going to be a different defensive coordinator than what they had with Dan Quinn. You will know where you stand with Mike Zimmer. He's not interested in coddling the players. He's going to be very buttoned up. If you don't understand what you're doing, you're not going to be playing. I don't think you'll see a repeat of what happened against the Packers. We had guys running wide open in the secondary and things like that. So it's different at the coordinator spot at defense, you know, and I'm excited to see how Mike pulls this thing together. But yeah, there might be a little bit of a step back with the record, but I think it's going to be a very competitive division overall.
Great work, Brian. We appreciate you coming on today. Happy Memorial Day. Enjoy yourself. Thank you for all the insight.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Appreciate that. And thanks to the men and women out there that have given us the opportunity to talk a little ball today. We appreciate you guys.
Awesome stuff there from Brian Broaddus, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, host at 105.3 The Fan down in Dallas, former NFL scout. And the offensive line, the point that he brings up, like, I want to get those young guys out there. They need to get as many reps as possible. Yep. And I get where the coaching staff comes from, but got to get them ready to block the Cleveland Browns. That's week one, and it'll be here before we know it. All right, that does it for hour number one. Hour number two, we go riding spotlight and focus in on the interim coaching dilemma. We'll discuss it next after the break here on the Lombardi Line.